The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We've been talking about some general objections to evolutionary theories. The next one that I think it might be helpful to look at a little bit, is simply the idea that there is an obvious lack of intermediate species. I took one of the first courses I took in graduate school years ago was an evolution course, which was taught by Phi Beta Kappa from the University of Wisconsin. And I sat in that course, and there was an idea that kept popping up regularly. And it was hidden in a variety of ways, in a variety of contexts. The idea that somehow populations evolve, populations change. And there was an element of that that bothered me for a long time. And finally, the difficulty dawned on me. And the difficulty with that idea that populations evolve is simply that populations don't evolve. Populations don't reproduce. Two organisms reproduce, a male and a female. And whatever kind of change is going to occur has to be the kind of thing that can be reconciled with the necessity of the sexual reproduction. And somehow trying to take refuge in the idea of a population, that in the population this kind of change can somehow mystically occur, when in fact there is not a basis for it occurring between two individuals, I think expresses my difficulty with that idea clearly. Now, it's interesting to me that Charles Darwin was aware of this difficulty. Let me read you a quote from Darwin dealing with this. Origin of the Species. Quote, "Why, if species descended from other species by fine gradations, do we not everywhere see innumerable transitionary forms? As by this theory, innumerable transitional forms must have existed, why do we not find them embedded in countless numbers in the crust of the earth?" End quote. Now, this idea is sometimes referred to by modern evolutionists as gradualism, the notion that one organism is gradually going to change into another one. Now, one of those little nagging difficulties that was in my mind early and has never been removed simply has to do with the idea that organisms are a particular kind as opposed to other kinds. They are a cat rather than a dog, or an amoeba rather than a fungus, etc. And in order to perpetuate those organisms, there has to be a community of genetic material that allows the sexual reproduction and allows the formation of and birth, or whatever other processes involved in the young being brought to life, that requires that. And you start verging away from that community of genetic material, that collection of genes. And the first thing you're going to discover is that very rapidly this precludes the possibility of reproduction. Now, what the evolutionist actually needs is an organism of some sort which is one thing rather than something else, an earthworm as opposed to a clam, for example, but which has the genetic potential for changing into everything else. An amoeba, which is an amoeba, not a ciliate, but which has the capability of changing into all of the other protozoans, and then the sponges and the jellyfish and so on. And there is simply a self-defeating necessity in the genetic material for those different kinds of organisms. And this is one of the reasons that this sort of change simply is not going to occur. I had a debate at Georgia Tech some years ago, and in the question and answer session, one of the people asked me, well, what sort of evidence would it take to cause you to agree that evolution is possible? And I said, well, that's interesting. I usually don't hear a lot of new questions, but that happens to be one. Let me think about it for a little bit. And after a while, I responded to him. I said, I'm ready to answer your question. What kind of evidence would be necessary for me to accept the idea of evolution? And very simply, it is the evidence of one organism changing into a different organism. And this is exactly the kind of thing we don't see. It is interesting to me in the Scripture that the Scripture makes a comment about the biblical kinds. The biblical statement about kinds is that each kind will reproduce after its own kind. Now, it is my opinion that this is one of God's laws of science. I don't think God has many laws of science, and we quarreled about that a bit earlier. But this is God's biological law. He says that one kind of organism is never going to change into another. It's never going to give rise to another organism, which is the reason I'm so adamant about this idea that we're not going to see one kind of organism that will change into another organism. But it's interesting to me that this difficulty was apparent to Darwin. He was not under any delusion about that. I'd like to go to a statement by Gould again. And I keep choosing him because he is probably as well-known an evolutionist as we have in the United States presently. Paleontologists have paid an exorbitant price for Darwin's argument. We fancy ourselves as the only true students of life's history. Yet to preserve our favorite account of evolution by natural selection, we view our data as so bad that we never see the very process we profess to study. The history of most fossil species includes two features particularly inconsistent with gradualism. One, stasis. Most species exhibit no directional change during their tenure on Earth. They appear in the fossil record looking much the same as when they disappear. Morphological change is usually limited and directionless. That's a very important comment, and it's one that I will emphasize later when we look at fossils a little bit. You see them occur in the fossil record, easily recognizable, and when they disappear, they're still looking the same way. Some years ago, I had a debate with a faculty member at Purdue, and I usually try and set the arrangement for these debates carefully. The resolutions are agreed on, the wording of them, the timing, all of this. And I had wanted to have a debate on fossils, and this individual did not want to discuss that subject, so we didn't have one. But in the question and answer session, there was a young man who came with the man I was debating, and it seemed to me that he was probably a prospective son-in-law. But at any rate, during the question and answer session, he pulled out a package, and turned out he was a postdoc in paleontology, and he had a cast of one of the recent Archaeopteryx finds. And he went on at some length about the notion that the Archaeopteryx was somehow intermediate between reptiles and birds. And when I got a chance finally, I said, I want to be sure that I'm understanding what you're saying. Are you telling me that you really don't know whether the Archaeopteryx is a bird or a reptile? And his response was yes. And I said, well, that's very interesting. I think my recommendation to you would be to go back and review your freshman zoology, because I have zoology students back at the university that can tell the difference between a bird and a reptile. Now, the fact is, the Archaeopteryx is a very interesting bird, different in some respects, but it's a bird. And the point that Gould is making here is that it didn't appear first as something intermediate between the bird and the reptile. Unusual bird, but bird nonetheless, admitted even by the evolutionists themselves. And this is the point that Huxley is making here in his comment about stasis. Now, secondly, his comment was, the history of most fossil species includes two features particularly inconsistent with gradualism. One is stasis, two, sudden appearance. In any local area, a species does not arise gradually by the steady transformation of its ancestors. It appears all at once and fully formed. And those two things are immensely critical in the area of the objection that I'm talking to you right now. Now, in an article that appeared in Natural History, again, Gould, quote, "The fossil record, with its abrupt transitions, offers no support for gradual change, and the principle of natural selection does not require it. Selection can operate rapidly." Well, there are a number of folks, I think, that would probably be willing to debate that, evolutionists debate with him, but at least that was his statement. One other statement from that same article. "All paleontologists know that the fossil record contains precious little in the way of intermediate forms. Transitions between major groups are characteristically abrupt." So here you have a comment by a knowledgeable modern evolutionist dealing with the same idea that Darwin was making a comment about. Now, Professor Winchell, quote, "The great stubborn fact which every form of the theory encounters at the very outset is that notwithstanding variations, we are ignorant of a single instance of a derivation of one good species from another." Professor Kahn, "It is true enough that naturalists have been unable to find a single unquestioned instance of a new species." Let me interrupt this quote for a moment. I watched a program, PBS program, with Gould some years ago, and he went on at great length. Someone asked him about the question of intermediate species, and his response, "Oh, there's thousands of intermediate species," and went on and on and on. And later, there was a reply by some creationist, and it bothered me that they did not take him to task about this. The fact is, there are numbers of evolutionists who admit very candidly that there are not intermediate species. Now, we're going to leave this fuss to the point where we discuss fossils, but at least the idea, if you wish, you can keep in mind about that. Now, back to this quote. "It will be admitted at the outset on all sides that no unquestioned instance has been observed of one species being derived from another." Now, I wanted to get in a quote here from G.G. Simpson, who is familiar to any recent paleontologist, but I don't think we have time to do that. We'll probably begin with that next time. But what I've attempted to show you is that even evolutionists admit that there is no evidence of the change from one kind of organism, in this case, from one, we simply don't have specimens that are intermediate between one kind of organism and another.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.